Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 124 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So here we are, 124, 2016, first episode of the new year. What do we got?
Announcements.
Oh my gosh, we actually have announcements. What do we have this week?
Announcements this week? Well, we did have the People's Choice Awards. They started the week off kind of with that. That was midweek.
And what were the People's Choice, Summer?
People's choices were an award show where people voted.
What were the people's choices for the awards?
Well, there were three categories that Outlander was up for. They were up for Best Actress for Katrina Balfe, Best Actor for Sam Heughan, and Best Sci-Fi Fantasy Show for Outlander. And Outlander brought home two of the awards. They brought home Best Actress and Best Show.
So that's nice. At least Sam was nominated.
And here's the thing that people have to remember. People's Choice, it's kind of like all the teenagers sit around and vote for their favorites. And when there's teenagers involved and there's the other demographics involved, sometimes the teenagers are a lot more interested in voting. Not that we aren't real good at voting.
Oh, no.
We're amazing
Outlanders
at voting.
Kind of own voting.
However, if you see who won.
It's very teeny.
It was very, well.
Teen-led.
It was.
Teen voter-led.
Yeah, God, I'm trying to remember his name. He's on, like, a long time, Jensen Ackles, one from Supernatural. Supernatural has a huge following.
I'm glad they've you been had around. Because I never would have got there.
They've been around for a very long time, and they've been dominating categories of People's Choice for a very long time. So it was not a surprise. We would have loved for Sam to have won, obviously, but given who did won, it's a very internet.
Given who did win.
Who did
win. Yes. Who Given won?
We
win,
did
won.
Win.
We did win one.
It's a very active online community
conspiracy.
As well.
Oh, sorry, community.
Community, not conspiracy. Community.
Okay, so that was the first thing of kind of a big week. What was the
second
thing?
Well, that's
thing?
How it started. And the week's not over, people. The week is not over. It will be when the time, I don't know, it won't be over by the
well,
time
even
you guys
when
this.
This. Yeah, when they, well, depending on when they listen.
That's true.
The week will be over likely when you listen, unless you're hardcore, which we love, and you listen late. I don't know what time we're going to get it up on Sunday, but late-ish Sunday night, who knows. We're recording this Saturday, just so you know, and so it will go up sometime Sunday afternoon, evening, and we can say who we want to win for the Golden Globes, but we want all of them to win for the Golden Globes, but we definitely won't have those results.
Not yet. Not yet. We'll definitely talk about it on next week's episode, though, for
sure.
Oh,
my goodness. Yes.
But Friday, we also had the Winter TCAs, which is the Television Critics Association. Mm-hmm. They call them the upfronts, I believe.
I think so.
Stars had a panel, like, they started at, like, probably 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, and then Outlander was originally slated to go up at 9:45, but they didn't actually hit the stage till almost, like, 10:30. Mm-hmm. So they were...
But from what I understand, that's kind of how it works. Sometimes there's so
common.
Much going on, and it's so tight that things... can go over, or then if something goes long, just like anything else, if something goes long, then you, even though you're ready for the next one, it may take a few moments to reset, to move people around, get them up there.
Right, but I don't know if Outlander was the last thing that they had on the docket for Stars, and if that was the case,
well, Flesh and Bone was just before, right?
No.
Oh, Black
Sails,
right,
was
Black
just
Sails.
Before. Mostly because if they were the last thing slated, they probably got... I wonder if they got truncated.
Ah.
Because everyone was talking about how short it was.
They have to... Oh. Yeah, that was short.
Yeah.
I didn't watch. Obviously, we weren't there. But we were following the... We were obviously... I was retweeting the poop out of that stuff. And it's not hard to retweet. You just follow a hashtag. But it was intense. And you
Dude.
Read the same thing 10 times. And you're like, wait, I just tweeted that, right? Yeah, I did. So it wasn't hard. It's just intense. And it was like... 15, 20 minutes, right? Max.
Tops. But it was long enough to make me feel like I was reading The Matrix.
Oh, my goodness.
And I had, like, I swear I had a hangover, like a tweet deck hangover by the time it was over because I just had to look at something else. I had to go for a walk. It was just, they were just moving so fast because usually, you know, there's one, two, three, like they kind of update rather slowly. And
this
then,
was like 10. Two,
no, and I was 15. Following, and I was following both the TCA 2016 hashtag and the TCA 2016/Outlander. So I had both of them. And I will tell you that the regular TCA 2016 before Outlander started was barely moving.
Yep.
And then Outlander started, and then both of those feeds just started
bam.
Like lightning scrolling up my screen. And, oh, man, that was really hard. It was hard on my eyes. But it was good information, and they did release some new stuff. I know that during the actual TCAs, they were not talking about the trailer that they saw. I know that the entire panel started with a trailer.
They talked very, you're right. There were no details
not
like,
during.
Oh.
Not during.
No, that's true.
While it was airing, I think the main thing that I saw people writing was full of spoilers.
Yeah.
This trailer is full of spoilers.
Yes. But afterwards, they said a few things that were spoilery, but not saying of what actually happened. For example, they said Claire's in 1948.
Yeah, I did see that. And then later, after the whole thing went down, several of the people that were there did release kind of like articles that talked about kind of a play-by-play of what the trailer looked like, even though none of us actually got to watch it if you weren't there. And then they also, like, concurrently, like at the same time that the TCAs was going on, they released a new behind-the-scenes little vignette. It was probably about just over 2 minutes or just under two minutes long.
Yeah, about two.
And, I mean, I thought it was a lot of the stuff that we already saw in the first teaser trailer. But they had more. There was more dialogue.
And, of course, behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was more dialogue there, too. But also, like, there was Ron in that.
Yeah.
There was Ron, Katrina, people talking off-set.
Yeah.
Or on-set as themselves, not the characters.
So, good stuff, people. Good stuff. I'm sure we'll link to.
So, were there any disappointments? It was great. Don't get me wrong. It's all fun. Were there any disappointments? I mean, for me, there were.
I mean, just
that we didn't
with
get
the TCAs
something?
Or they did not give us a premiere date.
And
they did not announce Brianna.
And
I wasn't there to see it in person.
No. And we didn't find out anything about a possible or potential green light for season 3.
No, that's true.
Honestly,
I feel it in my bones, though. There's going to be a season
3. No matter who she is, I'm sorry. As much as I wanted it and said I wanted it, I still want her. But they were never going to reveal a character at that. They were never going to reveal any person at TCAs. This is especially with the time they were given. This is in and out, quick and dirty, show a thing, ask questions, basta.
And Ron keeps saying over and over again, quote unquote, we're real close to finding our Brie. You call BS on that?
I call malarkey. Not because we have any clue, but because we don't have any dates. I just think now that we have our Roger.
They're filming the last block right now. So they're real close to being finished filming from what I've read.
Well, okay, then that's all I have to say. It's so close to being done with almost everything.
Yeah.
Before nothing but post is being done. That I just can't believe she's not somewhere. Maybe like
in seclusion.
Yeah.
Hiding.
Or like locked in a hotel room somewhere. You know,
enjoying her last moments of anonymity.
Seriously. They bring her food or she orders room service three times a day.
I mean, she's not a prisoner.
Sometimes. Somehow. I mean, some kind of. So anyway, Brie. There's been a Roger and Brie watch for, a year now or more, right? Ever since we've had the green light for season 2. Fair enough. Brie watch, I don't think, was ever as big or as important to people, especially since a lot of us are ladies. And certain gentlemen of a certain persuasion were really wanting Roger. Got it. We all wanted Roger. Now we've got Roger. But, of course, with Roger, you get Brie. It's called Roger and Brie, right? I mean...
Or is it Brie and Roger?
No, it's Roger and Brie. It just doesn't work the other way. Brianna and Roger, I could say, but Roger, Brie, I don't know why, but Roger and Brie. No, Brie's a very important character, obviously. She's in the rest of, she's like at least nine now. Except for book one. But I just have to believe that she's not being kept, not being held against her will. No, but I think she's being held somewhere. So just like,
or
when
by
people,
someone.
No, just like when people, when it took so long, and
just,
to be fair,
it, she's on like her baby moon, you know, like when
her baby moon,
wait for it, when like pregnant,
before she gets birth,
wait for it.
I know
when
what
a
it
pregnant
is.
Couple wants to go away and have one last like vacation where it's just them before the baby shows up. So it's like before everything changes.
Yes.
It's like they're this version of a baby moon.
Her Bree moon.
Bree moon?
Baby. Bree. Yes.
Say, I'd rather say Bree moon.
Or BB moon. Bree moon. Well, okay. Whatever. Either way, it's some kind of
but
moon.
But that's my point. I'm
I can go with that. But we can also say, remember, before when we had Jamie like forever, and then we didn't have Claire. People were like, oh my gosh, Claire. And we found out it legit took them ages to find her. She literally started or was cast like 2 weeks before they started filming. It was that like last minute. But they found the perfect Claire. So there was a joke. I remember this. And no, I don't know. I remember there was the, you know, Claire Watch hashtag and all these hashtags. But there was some, there were, it got so ridiculous at one point that people were saying, free Claire. You know, free Claire. And then someone said something like, she's in his trunk somewhere. I mean, let her out. I mean, it gets, because of course you're a fan and you want to see it and you want to, and obviously they can keep. First of all, I don't believe she's not around yet. I believe she's around and they know who she is. Because like you said, it's too close, I think. And if they have, I don't think they would have given us Roger without having Bree. That's just my opinion. I have no evidence. It's just my gut. However, they for sure, for real, did not have Claire when they cast Jamie. We know that for a fact. Yeah. And he slipped out. We know that. That was not an on par. Don't give me that look.
He slipped out?
Well, it was an accident, I think. Did they say it? It wasn't on purpose. They ended up having to confirm it, right? 2 days later, three days later. But who knows how long it would have been before he was actually announced. Maybe they would have wanted to do Claire and Jamie together. Who knows? We'll never know. But my point is, because however it came about, there was such a long wait for Claire. It was like, people were like, you can't hide her for 10 months. You know, when you're out filming in the... And then we find the Bakers, right? The Bakers find everybody. So put it this way. If we don't get a Bree and they're filming...
It's in sound stages.
Maybe not everything. If they go to an outdoor, like a cemetery or something. That's from book 2. But anyway, I'm just saying, who knows? It may all be on sound stages and nothing outside. But may the force be with you. That's all I'll say. So those are pretty much announcements, right?
Those are the big ones, for sure.
I think we got them.
I think that's it for this week.
And
still tomorrow.
Oh, gosh, which I know.
We'll come back to that next week.
So I know that what we have to share with you this week is, for us, again, pretty special. It always tickles our fancy to be able to talk to this dude. We just...
Dude.
Love him to bits. He's not a dude.
Have you ever called him a dude before?
Not to his
face. Would you call him a dude to his face? So
no,
why would you call him a dude behind
because
his back?
Because he's a dude. He doesn't mean, it's not an insult.
No,
he's
it's
a guy.
Not.
He's a man.
I would never call Scottish people dudes.
Why not?
Because, I don't know, just to me it...
Maybe if you said it in a Scottish accent. Hey, dude.
No, I wouldn't. That sounds bad. No, I just think of dude as being like
a California
thing. Like people that are like East Coast dudes.
If I were saying it as like, oh my gosh, like, wow, like, dude. Okay, that's like more of an exclamation, right? Like, wow. But if it just comes out and it's not really planned and like meaning to say like, oh, is it a man or woman or whatever? And I came out, I was like, oh, no, he's a dude. I would say that about anyone from anywhere in the world.
You're just
covering now? No, that's legit how I talk.
Is it?
It's not the most
intelligent
way.
You don't say legit very often, so that's not legit how you talk.
Look. Okay, so we want...
I'm sure he's fine with it.
I almost said we want Brianna, but that's going backwards. Okay, we still do want her, though. So this guy...
There it is.
This feller.
This lad.
Oh, that's probably good. This lad, this bloke, that we will share... Oh, my God. This guy who we spoke with, and who's... I didn't even say interview, because it was more of a chat. It truly was a chat that we're going to share this episode, is our friend... Agav
We're welcoming
Oberoin.
Back.
We're welcoming back for what, a third or fourth time?
There it's was the third.
At least the third. The third was unofficial. He was like a...
That didn't happen.
Oh, sorry. It didn't happen?
No, he wasn't there.
Okay. He wasn't there. So this is the...
Third.
Winky, winky third time.
Hey, if we have not put it out there, so if they want to go back and figure out when he was on it again, they can, but I'm not putting it out there.
So this is his third official visit. that we'll say to the Outlander podcast. And we thank him very much for his time. And
As always.
Yeah. So we hope you enjoy our chat with Agave O'Brien. So I think we may have a special guest joining us today.
He's very special.
He's one of our favorite Scottish people, favorite people in general. And we've had him on the show a few times before. I don't know if this is like your third or fourth time. I don't know exactly, but...
Third.
Yeah, well, he was part of
the... Oh, no, you're right. It was... Okay, fourth.
What am I saying? I know numbers.
You do.
So we want to give a huge hearty welcome to our friend Agave O'Brien. Agave, hello!
Joris, Jimirahashi.
We're okay. How are you doing?
This went very well, thanks. What's the crack?
So let's catch up a little bit. What have you been doing since, basically since you stopped your participation or your part of Outlander filming for season one?
You've been busy, Agave.
Where to start? I honestly haven't a clue.
Let's see. Since we last saw you in person, there's been a lot going on with your resurgence of the Gaelic language.
Uh-huh. I found myself able to actually get back to some projects that had to hit the back burner. And one of those, obviously, the most important one was the local dialect. With one speaker left, it was imperative to get back to that and crack on with the plan as had been set in place quite a few years previously. So got cracked on with that, and then all the good souls all over the world, you know, chipped in, and we managed to get the 10 grand raised, and we've just been building the website bit by bit. It's been kind of piecemeal, even with having a bit more time, because there's just so much needing done, but we're getting there. We've got a couple of pages up now and quite a bit of material. With all with English translations as well, so it's fully accessible. So there's definitely been that, and that all, frankly, I can see that project carrying on till the day I cark it, you know, to be honest.
There's been a lot going on with the Gaelic language, clearly with your website going on, but also, can we talk about the fact that the Glaswegian accent was voted one of the sexiest?
Okay, well, yeah, a bit of a departure, of course, across to our other native language, the Lowland Scots. 20 years ago, if you'd said that to me, that a Glaswegian accent was going to be voted sexiest. I mean, I think it sounds great personally, you know, naturally being a bit biased, but I suppose maybe it's just when it's your own accent, you don't assume that it's going to be that attractive to other people because it's passé. You speak it, you speak with it, you know, you hear it every single day. You don't think of it as having international appeal, but there you go. Yeah.
No, if somebody tried to say that American Standard English was a sexy language, I would laugh in your face. So I can totally see that.
Exactly. Well, this is the point. I mean, I suppose it depends on who's speaking. You know, I mean, if you're just standing at a bus stop with an old drunk with a can of super lager, you know, trying to chat you up, you're probably not going to find it very sexy. For obvious reasons, but
your company, what you do, your business, and your plan for the website and stuff you're doing has been in the works for quite a while. When we spoke with you last year, you were talking about how this built up when you started learning, and you said you wanted to be fluent by 35, and you hit fluent, but doing something big by 35, and you definitely got there. This was obviously Outlander, which was vehicle to launch from, but also to be able to reach more people. So, have you done working towards the development of this website before it kind of took off? What did you have to get done? What went into this?
I think when you spoke to me last year, I had probably just about been on the verge of flipping my lid after an entire year on 13-hour days. But when I think back over the years leading up to starting an Outlander, plenty of people have said to me, I've no idea how you've done this or how you managed it. But although I had a grand plan in mind, obviously, to revitalize the dialect entirely to the point where it became a spoken vernacular again, you know, just like any other massive project, you're still chipping away little by little, literally, you know, hour by hour, day by day. And if you sort of look up and look ahead into the distance and think about the amount of work that actually needs done, you'll never get through it. You'll just terrify yourself. So you take every little bit and you just chip away and you chip away and you chip away. And then eventually, of course, you turn round after a few years of chipping away and you go, wow, look at all that back there that I've just done, you know. But even then, you're still as well not to look forward. You're still as well to keep chipping away. Even though you've realised you've achieved a whole load, the best possible thing is just to still keep the head down, you know. And normally people say, oh, chin up, look ahead, be ambitious. But when you already know what your ambition is, you know, I can only imagine it must be the same writing a book, especially like Diana's books, you know, 1,000 pages or whatever or more. If you think about it right at the beginning about everything you need to do, you know, you'll probably put yourself off even starting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's an ongoing thing. I mean, as you're meeting all these milestones, are you constantly creating more things for yourself? Is it like, I've met this, now I need to do this? I mean, is there like a grand scheme of things that you're planning to do?
That final thing, although you've never called it final, when you meet, like Summer's saying, when you meet something, you're like, oh, but I still have to do this. Or are you always adding more?
Do you know, every time I get to a milestone, you know, all it does is open up another chapter of what's next. You know, when I think about it, it's sort of ridiculous. You know, I never give myself a moment's peace. You know, I should really be, I suppose, a little kinder to myself, you know, and say, well, you've done well, you've managed this, you know. But each time I get to a particular point that I know has been extremely beneficial to what I'm trying to do, obviously all it does is open up on other doors. So, you know, for instance, get to the stage where we're now well underway with building this website for one dialect, and I've already got the next dialect in mind that I'd like to try and revitalise, which means learning it fluently as well, you know, which I've sort of done. I'm semi-fluent in another dialect now. So, you know, but I occasionally catch myself and go, like, what are you actually doing? You know, why do you do this to yourself? It's torture. But when you're driven, you know, by a kind of cultural imperative, something that you think is, you know, just incredibly important, then it's impossible to turn it off. Even in your moments where you're doubting yourself and you're kind of going, oh, this is ridiculous, you know, the amount of hassle I'm giving myself, there's always something that pulls you through.
Do you have an ultimate goal? I mean, I think when we first started talking, it was revitalizing the one dialect. As you've been revitalizing that dialect, how many, I mean, what's the end goal? Is there something that is like the biggest goal possible? Like, is there like, I don't know, how many dialects are there in Gaelic?
Oh, over 200.
Good Lord.
I know.
So you need to basically live forever.
Well, this is the thing, you know, I mean, I suppose what I'm trying to do is like reset the parameters, you know, reset the guidelines as to what dialect revitalization is all about. I think probably if I was to say what my absolute ultimate goal would be, it's to actually get to the stage where I've changed the world a little bit. So as far as I'm concerned, revitalizing the dialect and the language in general in Scotland is about a reconnection of Scots with culture and heritage, which has been shown time and again to create healthier individuals when they appreciate where they come from and who they are. You know, if you look at the most poverty-stricken regions of the world, they're normally regions that have been hit by imperialism. You know, so it could be, you know, it could be sort of people living in the Amazon Basin. It could be the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. You know, I mean, Glasgow, parts of Glasgow were just, you know, third world-esque, you know, and obviously all places that have been hit by imperialism. And when people have their language and culture severed from them, it is literally like losing a leg, you know. And so when you reintroduce people to that and they get to sort of touch that, I remember I used to talk about it, it's like touching the vein, you know, which leads all the way back to the past, you know, right into the proverbial mists of time. It's amazing what it does for people. It's a transformative experience. You know, it's practically, you know, it's probably pseudo-religious in a way. You know, it certainly occasionally feels like a religion to me, my own culture, because I'm sort of devoted to it, you know. And as I say, the sort of transformative element of that is really, really striking. You know, when kids grow up knowing their own heritage, they're far more less likely to get into crime, get into drugs and drink and all the rest. I mean, you know, we're all into the drink, aren't we? But, you know, to varying degrees of healthiness. So, you know, the evidence is there. When people are linked up to their own heritage and they're confident and they're well, you know, within their soul, as opposed to just physically or mentally. So the idea for me eventually is genuinely to, I don't know, you know, this may be the first place I've ever actually said it, like, where people can hear me say it. You know, a lot of things go on in my mind for years and never get actually spoken about. But I would genuinely really quite like to form what is supposed to be more or less a world tribal council, and open up dialogue with people from, you know, minority language and culture groups all over the world. And just, I don't know, just kind of offer solidarity to people and have solidarity from them, because it's very, very lonely here in Scotland. You know, we've got very few people who are in this for the spirit of it, for what it means to them, you know, spiritually. People are very, very cold and pragmatic. You know, oh, it's good to have two languages. You know, you learn other languages easier. You know, hold on a minute, you know, I didn't learn German so I could learn French, you know. Do you know what I mean? I learned German, you know, because of whatever reason or you know, whatever, if you're, Spanish is your second language, you've learned it for a reason for you, because it's something that matters. Maybe you picked up a bit at school, maybe it's not that important to you. But for most people, especially those who approached it in later life or put their kids into some kind of education system, there's normally something extra there than just saying, oh, it'll be good because they'll be bilingual, you know. There's normally slightly more than a cold, hard, pragmatic thing. But in Scotland at the moment, you know, it's all about legislation and about quangos and committees and people sitting around in suits, like, you know, talking big talk and actually, like, most of these people, you know, it would be a bit dull even sitting having a pint with them. Do you know what I mean? So you get very, very few people who really appreciate, you know, or if they do, then they don't feel that they can talk about it. I'm not really sure. I'm still trying to figure that one out. But Scotland's a fantastic place to be for many reasons, especially after the referendum and everyone being very energised by that, you know, despite the horrific result. You know, it's a nice place to be in many ways. People are very aware politically and now, and they're very energetic about that sort of thing, and they don't take any pish, as we would say, you know. But culturally, still, there's so much work to do, and it's actually, it's quite a lonely place to be. I've actually met a lot more people from the States and Canada and Australia, you know, who get it much, much more than people here. Do you know what I mean? And occasionally it verges on the embarrassing. When I visited the States earlier in the year and met up with you guys and various other people, you know, the enthusiasm sort of really put a lot of folk here to shame. I don't know, you know, I can see it changing to some extent, you know, but it's like the sort of grinding wheel. It's definitely evolution, not revolution.
So what kind of response have you seen in once your website launched and you kind of went live, although you were already doing what mm-hmm. you're doing, what your passion is, with that map that, you know, the like the interactive map and the videos and everything? What was your hope or your plan with that? And what has the response been?
Well, I mean, admittedly, there's not all that much material there at the moment, but there's enough to sort of dip your toe in the water. I mean, Gamaliscal. There's definitely enough to dip your toe in the water as things stand. But because there's not a whole wealth of material there yet, then there's not, you know, quite enough for anybody to really get in and learn a heck of a lot in terms of learning to speak the language and anything like that. But the response has been like very positive when we've shared things on the Facebook page and what have you. We put up a link to a new page that has some new stories or information on it. But funnily enough, actually, like, the vast majority of people haven't claimed their prizes from the crowdfunder yet.
Oh my gosh.
I've taught one lesson, you know, on Skype to a lassie that claimed her prize, and literally every single other prize remains unclaimed. So if there's anybody out there that won a lesson from me for contributing to the cause, you may claim it. There's all sorts of freebies sitting that people have won, and you know, I think they've just forgotten about it. But in a sense, that almost is quite nice in a way, because I've realised that they were given for the sake of giving it something they believed in, they thought was important, which is really nice. But the addenda to that would be, claim your prizes, people. You know, you're due them. You've earned them. Yeah.
Ah, that's all. I can't believe people aren't like knocking down your door to get their prizes. I mean, lessons, I would be all over it.
Like, and like, genuinely, I think, you know, I think they were genuinely contributing it for the, you know, to the crowdfunder for the right reasons. And so the prizes weren't that important to them, which was really cool, you know. But at the same time, you know, you've earned them. Come get them. You know who you are. Don't make me get the
Don't make. You're like, you signed up for a lesson. We're doing this. Where are you? When are you available? We're making it happen.
That's it. You know, the shepherd's crook to, you know, rope in the would-be learners. I'm not doing that much teaching at the moment in terms of at home. I'm not actually teaching any classes, you know, in cafes or any of the places I used to do stuff. So, you know, I'm twiddling my thumbs here, people. Come on.
Well, speaking of, well, actually, no, not speaking of twiddling thumbs, but speaking of the language and working with the language. Last time we spoke with Claire, the herbalist, she has said that they were trying to raise money to have some of these really great old texts translated. And I'm not sure how much of that was done.
No, nothing so far. It was one of those things where myself and Claire went to the library in Edinburgh. And the problem is, you know, if you send a couple of Geminis off together to get something done, just, you know, it kicked them to end up in the pub having a scran and a pint of beer. And, you know, you know. We got into the library, but of course we completely goosed the whole thing up and didn't get in time to actually access any of the ancient texts. So we sort of, you know, posted up a photo to make it look like we'd made it in time. It was far too embarrassing to admit that we'd totally goosed it up and turned up to the library too late. But we actually found some really cool books that had parts of the texts in them and descriptions of them. So we did get stuff done, but I think we looked a lot more studious and efficient than we were that day, you know. I actually still owe Claire a bite to eat and a beer. You know, I know she thinks I've forgotten about it, but I haven't. I've got a new job starting in the new year, so I may actually have some cash to shout at her lunch. So, Claire, I'm going to sort you out, don't worry.
So speaking of the new year, what... Mm-hmm. Can you speak of what your next job is, or is it something you're not able to?
I think I'm okay to talk about it now. It's really, really exciting, actually. You know, when you start your own business, the first year is always, you know, pretty tough. And obviously, you know, January last year kicked off with my mum passing, and it was a real watershed, because the really weird thing about that day was, you know, I started my business in the morning and my mum passed away in the afternoon. So I was just like, you know, could you actually get, like, you know, a more of a watershed of a day? Do you know what I mean? It was huge. But, I mean, I feel very, very positive about the way things have gone since. You know, it was that kind of a way where, well, you can't do anything but just start fresh from that, you know, because that's like... being the absolute square one emotionally and professionally and building yourself back up. So I always look at these challenges as learning experiences. And the past year has, geez, you'll talk about a learning curve, it's been massive. But starting in your own business, like anyone who's listening out there who's done that will know that in the first year, you're just trying to get a grip of the thing and just have some sense of what the rhythm of it's going to be, you know, When work starts coming in, sometimes it looks like it's going to be semi-permanent and then it's not. And other times, you know, you get a wee phone call from someone, you think, oh, do you know, will I even bother with that? Is it even worth my while? And the next thing, you know, you end up with 6 months work out of it or whatever, you know. So it's really, really tough to find that kind of rhythm and allow yourself to relax into it, because you're totally uptight about looking out opportunities all the time. But just coming up to the end of this year, honestly, I just about hit bloody rock bottom with it. I was just like, this sucks. This is a nightmare. I'm completely and utterly broke. There's no work coming in. About five separate opportunities were meant to come through, and none of them did. You know that sort of horrible way where you're like, come on, give me at least one of them. Nothing. You know, I was just like, oh, this is a nightmare. It's all gone wrong, you know. And then the very next day, you know, I get a phone call saying, oh, we'd really like you to start in the new year. So, you know, it's like, oh, ye of little faith, you know, all you had to do was hang on one more day. And I totally, I lost my stuff, you know, on the Tuesday, got the phone call on the Monday, you know. So I don't mind admitting that. But the phone call came from a company called Bombardier Publishing. And what they do, very, very interesting work that they do. They've done it in Latin America, in Sweden, and in England. And that is to publish books for young people by young authors. So what happens is they go into schools, find out who's really interested in creative writing, and then they add the kids to this system called MageQuill. And what it is, it's like an online portal type thing where you can go on and write. You know, it's almost as responsive as writing in Word, except it's online, so it all saves as you go. It's like a blog, really, but you don't have to publish it to anybody unless you want them to, but you can show your class it. Your teacher signs up for an account as well, so they can be there and oversee the thing. You can publish it to the whole of Scotland, the whole of the world, if you like. And as you're gathering, of course, it's now started happening here as well. And what it means is that young people are getting feedback on their writing, and they're coming through as the kind of new generation of authors with a really clear idea, obviously, of what people their age want to read, because they are someone of their age. So they've got that kind of a head start. And as you can imagine, as I'm sure you feel, I'm on the verge of getting to the point of all this. We are now doing it for Scottish Gaelic, and I am the coordinator countrywide.
Nice.
So what I'm going to be doing is going to schools. I've already visited a couple of schools, had a really good time, really good bit of banter and chat with the kids, finding out what they like to read, finding out what they like to write, who writes, who doesn't, why do they write, why do they not write, why do they read this, why do they not read that, what do they think of the material in the language at the moment that's out there. Lots of interesting questions to be asked, lots of really interesting answers that you don't expect, you know, kids writing a lot of fan fiction, you know, reading a lot of stuff by authors who did YouTube videos and then turned to writing a book about it. I mean, that might make a lot of sense to people listening, but to me, that was new. Fan fiction I knew was a thing. I didn't realise people of 14 and 15 were doing it, which maybe was silly of me, but, you know, so that was really, really, really eye-opening. And at the moment, with the Scottish Gaelic world as things stand, we've got a terrible dearth of quality material. We've got some half-decent translations, but there's very few people obviously writing new stuff, because there's very few people speaking the language.
There is that.
So, you know, what I keep saying to people when they say, oh, the language is coming back to life, it's coming back to life, and I say, well, it's not really, because for a language to be truly alive, it doesn't just kind of like crawl along through the broken glass on its belly. You know, at some point you're expecting it to get up and run. But if a language doesn't have speakers of a high enough, you know, decent enough kind of ability, then it will never be anything other than a kind of pidgin Creole type thing, you know, because kids are not taught to try and shoot for the stars with a language. They're like, oh, we saved it, you know, job done. At least it's not going to die. Now we can all sit back and, sup our whiskey. No, absolutely not. The language, if it is not going to produce any authors and poets and playwrights, and do you know what I mean? Then, well, what the heck are we doing? You know, if it can't stand up next to any other language, given the history of its literature, which is, I mean, the poets we've had in the language are some of the best in the world. Shirley MacLaine, some people think, is one of the best of the 20th century worldwide. So we've had fantastic poets. And the point, really, the question to ask is, are we at the stage where we're ready to say that Scottish Gaelic will never, ever again produce a Shirley MacLaine or a Duncan Ban McIntyre or an Alistair MacVice or Alistair? Are we ready to say that, ready to admit that? And this is what I keep saying to people, and I'm not ready to admit that. I think the language, obviously, has just as big a potential as it ever did to bring forth the literary greats. But if nobody cares about the standard of the language that's taught to kids, then where the heck are they going to come from? So the point is, here's me moaning the face off of people about this kind of a thing, as I do, you know, whoever will listen to me. And then the next thing you know, the job opportunity comes up is me mentoring the next generation of Gaelic writers.
Well, and I think that's the goal, though, is you reach a point where you're not just translating into your language, where you're creating.
Well, precisely. And if kids don't have the ability, because they've not been taught to take real genuine pride in the language, then that's not going to happen, you know. And with English language writing, you're still seeing a fantastic, storytelling pedigree, and the same with Spanish. You know, with any major language, in fact, you're still seeing fantastic writers coming through. With Scottish Gaelic, it's more or less dried up. There's bits and pieces here and there, but I wouldn't say that there's anyone really outstanding, you know, and it would be a shame to do, I mean, a shame, it's an understatement. It would be an absolute crime, really, to just let that situation, perpetuate. So, as I say, you know, careful what you wish for.
So what I'm hearing, and tell me if I'm wrong, is that while it is a good thing to save a language, absolutely, and to introduce it and to make sure or to get it taught as a second language, because that's where you would have to start, obviously. And then hopefully, in your case, as you are bringing up your children, there will little by little be first language speakers.
Aye.
But outside of the, at least for now, rare occurrence of the new natives.
Yeah.
Or the young natives.
No, that's true. That's very true. Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of second language speakers who have this varying ability. And especially with the young, if it's an adult, you know, fair enough. They're going to go as far as they want because they have, if you're an adult learner, there's typically a motivation there. But if you're a child and it's part of your curriculum, you're doing it because at first you're doing it because you have to. So if all you have in your school is, oh, well, okay, we had this assignment, we had this assignment, we had that assignment.
Yeah. Something you have to do.
Exactly. But you're not, and so you can then, when you're in at uni or at a cocktail party, this is very American of me because this is something that we would do, right? You're at a cocktail party, you could say, oh, I can say Merry Christmas in Gaelic. You know, here's my school Gaelic.
Yeah.
If what you're taught, or if your experience with that subject is not taught in the panorama of the heights, the limits are those you set for yourself. And here are some examples of these brilliant writers. If it's not included as your introduction to not just learning these letters and learning the verb conjugations, it's taught as it's a world. And if you're not shown that world, you won't go into it.
Yeah, for sure. I think people have been so incredibly worried about putting kids off because Gaelic generally, I mean, whether you're in Ireland or the Isle of Man or Scotland, you know, is obviously for long enough been seen as old-fashioned. Because people are so afraid of putting kids off with it kind of being old-fashioned, what's ended up happening is the baby's kind of been thrown out with the bathwater. And what I keep saying to people is roots and leaves, roots and leaves, roots and leaves. You know, you can't just have everything modern, you know, where suddenly Scottish Gaelic's turned into the most modern space-age tongue in the planet. You know, well, hang on a second, you know, everything that made it beautiful in the past, everything that fed into its current condition and identity has just been jettisoned. It's just been chucked. And this is what kind of happened. People were so scared that the kids would think it was old-fashioned that they just sort of ditched all that stuff. And the only time that people were, you know, that kids were encouraged to get into anything from the past was as part of a school curriculum, like you're saying, oh, study this poet or look at this piece of prose or whatever. And I mean, that kind of a thing, that's just the stuff you get at school. You're naturally going to turn your back on that because you're discovering your own identity. And what you tend to do is you throw off the constrictions, whether it's set by your parents or school, you know, whatever authoritative figures are there, you naturally over time you throw those off so you can find out who the heck you are and test out your own decision making, your own ability to create your own opportunities. The facts of the matter are the leaves will be created by the fact that young people will speak the language. That the leaves will be created on their own just by that. If you don't have the roots, then the whole thing will dry up and die. And this is absolutely what's happening. And the way I see it is, if we can maintain the tradition coming through, if we can keep people in touch with everything that was great about the poetry and the prose of the past and bring these new writers through, feeding off of that, learning true idiomatic ability, learning the full expressiveness of the language, but talking about things that are relevant to them today, then we maybe have a winning formula. But it's funny that up until this point, people haven't really been paying that much attention to it. It's like, oh, we must modernise this language. We must make it cool. Well, you know, your common or garden Outlander fan will tell you that this language is inimitably cool exactly just as it is. You know?
For the reason, because of what it is.
Yeah, exactly. It is what it is. And you either find it beautiful or you don't. The way I see it is, it's not about quantity, it's about quality. If kids don't find it attractive, well, I don't really care if they don't speak it. What I do care about is the people that do want to speak it. I want to hear about their reasons for doing that. I want to know what it's all about for them. And I want to help them to express themselves through it. And that's the whole point. But what the powers that be have done is say, oh, goodness, if we don't act now and make it cool, then we'll lose the kids. But the problem is, if you give a discus thrower a shot putt and you say, okay, you've got to throw that shot putt as well as the shot putter there, well, you know, he or she's not going to be able to do that, you know. So it's like saying to Gaelic, oh, you need to now do exactly what English does because that's the only way to survive. Well, it's not going to be able to do that because it has a different skill set. You know, if you just drag in the analogy right out here, but if you can still follow that, you know, Gaelic is exactly what it is. It has its strengths and it has its weaknesses as well, but it inhabits an area that belongs to it. And English inhabits an area that belongs to it. And there's crossover for sure. You can talk about, you know, a soccer game in English and in Gaelic. Absolutely. But can you talk about the finer points of robotics in Gaelic? No, you can't. You know, can you really describe the hills and glens of Scotland in English? No, you can't. So while the there is crossover, you know, they inhabit different spheres of Scotland's kind of cultural makeup. And I think that's okay. It needs to be accepted that that's okay, rather than trying to make Gaelic, you know, hunt with the hounds and run with the hares. You know?
What you're saying about, can English be used to adequately or to most precisely describe the hills of Scotland? And I think that's a very interesting, not a statement, a very interesting thing that you've said, because that reminds me of what they say, that English has like one or two or three words for snow, of like there's snow and there's slush, right, and then there's maybe like the really, really hard packed one, right? And then Japanese or the Eskimos have like 50 or 90 words.
Well, they see it a lot more than we do.
I think it's even more than that, actually. Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know what I said to you the last time or we've ever spoken about this, but Marl once asked me for all the words for rain in Gaelic. I can't even remember why. I think she just thought it would be funny just to find out how many there were, you know. And I think it was connected to the Eskimo snow thing, you know. And I tracked down 82 words for rain.
Oh my god.
Well, there are so many different kinds of rain in Scotland, let's be honest.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you've got you've just got ushk, which is just water. You know, and then you could say ha dorstu, it's pouring, you know, or you could say ha kiobanachan. And kiobanach is like that light, fine, misty rain that kind of just swirls around and, you know, like as if you're in a steam room or something, you know. You've got smugrich, which I suppose is, that's probably quite similar. It's maybe slightly heavier, you know. And then you've got gilevache, which literally means the drowning flood, you know. And then you've got ha stotu, and that's stotu is when it's bouncing off the ground. But when we don't have a word for that in English, you just say, oh, the rain's bouncing off the ground. Do you know what I mean? And it's funny because it's come into, Stoto has come into Scots as it's stoting down. So you've got to say like the rain is really pouring, you know, then you're saying it's stoting down, and that's from the Gaelic, a stoto, you know. So there's just a smattering of some of the words, you know.
What's the word for sideways rain?
Sideways rain?
Yeah, when the wind is so strong that it's blowing it in your face sideways.
Oh, that, you would probably say something like "ushkatarsinyach," like across the way water. Either that or a cheap drink.
Now, you mentioned obviously rain we just discussed. Are there any other examples of concepts? Because obviously rain is a thing, but it's also a concept because it's not one thing in Gaelic. So are there any other concepts or things, I guess you could say, that like rain, like snow for the Eskimos, have different or multiple expressions in Gaelic?
I'm trying to think.
Don't hurt yourself.
Don't hurt myself.
No.
Hold on, sorry, I'll pack the chainsaw back in its box then, you know. The thing that always pops into mind is not so much that it's almost like the opposite concept in a way that, and it's one that Gaels will always bring this word up because it means a lot and it doesn't have an equivalent in English. And the word is Cianalus. And Cianalus, I will try and describe it, but it will take me an entire sentence. Cianalus is the nostalgic reverie, a nostalgic, slightly painful, almost to the point of physicality, almost point of being physical, reverie of thinking about your home when you're too far from it to get to it. Oh, it's homesickness, but it's not. No, you couldn't just say it was homesickness. You know, homesickness is just like, oh, you know, I miss everything, I miss everybody, you know. But Cianalus, it's a longing for home, culture, language, everything. It's being separated from everything that made you who you are. Now, just think about how long it took me to try and explain that. Except, do you know, there's an easier way to explain it. It goes like this. Cianalus.
There's a word like that in German. That I always laugh about. It's doch, which is pretty much, it's just negating anything that anyone said before you, but it means
so
many things.
Negating, it means the opposite.
Right.
The equivalent in Scots would be, ah, your ass.
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's awesome. What can you say about
season two?
About your involvement in season two?
What can I say? Well, my involvement's obviously been stripped down. I mean, anybody who's paying attention knows that. I think there's definitely a creative change of tack somewhere. But from what I've seen and been involved with, there's going to be no drop in quality, that's for sure. It looks amazing. I cannot wait to just, you know, whenever it comes around, just sit and watch it, you know, because I've actually there's a lot of it I haven't seen, a heck of a lot, so it's going to be really, really fresh and really exciting for me. The French stuff just looks magnificent, You know, that way it's so grand, it shouldn't be allowed, you know?
Oh, you're breaking my heart hearing this.
There is so much opulence in the photos that have been released that, I mean...
Well, exactly. You've seen the photos, so I'm not giving anything away. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It just looks so lush.
And from what I understand, what they've released are not the ultimate of what's gone down. Like, they are releasing like the everyday stuff. So what we're actually going to see of the French stuff is going to blow our minds.
Kick us in the pants.
Oh, well, it is me too, because I've barely seen any of it, you know, and I'm kind of quite pleased about that, because it's going to be fantastic. I'm a fan of the show. Like I keep saying to people, I mean, it could have gone wrong. I could have worked on something that could have been crap, you know, but it's one of the best shows I've ever seen. And to be able to say I worked on it is pretty damn nice. And season two just doesn't look like it's going to disappoint one bit. I cannot wait to sit down and watch it. And I mean, the language is involved again, you know, so obviously I've been back in the saddle with that again, and it sounds great. The boys did a terrific job again. So, can't wait.
Now, how far in the series have you read? Clearly, you've read through book two.
No.
No? Not even the parts in book two that you needed to, like, translate?
I honestly haven't read book two.
No.
I know, it's terrible. It's shocking. Just this year, with trying to, you know, get this business off the ground, I can't even remember the last time I read a book, never mind managed to do what should be a sacred duty and read book two. It's just been, it has been just a slog this year, an absolute slog. There's been very little time for pleasure at all. But, you know, when there has been pleasure, it's been massive, obviously, coming over to the States in March and April, getting to the Outlandish Gathering in Canada in August, which was just fantastic. So when there's been pleasure, it's been massive. But no, reading has, that's gone by the by. I've had a subscription to Babbel, you know, which I managed to get really cheap in one of their deals they were doing, you know, the language learning platform. And it sat unused from essentially the whole of this year until about a week ago. And I thought, I've been paying a monthly subscription on this, I better use it. That's how tight things have been in terms of time, just trying to get this business off the ground. But anyway, back into the pool, having come out and got myself a cocktail, you know, and slipped back into the pool, hoping nobody noticed.
Oh, we noticed. I mean, we didn't expect to see you back in the pool during France, but the second it got back on Scottish soil, we were like, Agaf's going to be there. He's so going to be there.
Oh, yeah. I was there or thereabouts.
So, again, without giving any details and, you know, talking about things you can talk about, you said that the lads, right, the men, the boys, the guys that you worked with, again, impressed you or continue to impress you.
Yeah.
Was there anything new that came with your work this time that was not there or was different from season one?
Not really. I mean, obviously, I've just not been as around, but the guys weren't starting from scratch this time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They were coming off a year of having been tackling the language. So, obviously, we didn't have to go through that intensive period of just trying to help them get their heads around the whole concept of speaking it at all. So, we just kind of picked up where we left off. You know, no, I couldn't really say there's been anything particularly different in terms of the experience of teaching the language in that sense. No, just more of the same, you know, yeah.
Any new standouts?
No, just the old favourites.
Just the old favourites.
Coming on the final stretch, getting ready to wrap up as far as filming, not production. And then the next thing we want besides Brianna is we want, of course, that air date, that premiere date. Now, outside of the premiere date, of course, we want an announcement for season three. Now, let's just say we get it, whenever it comes. If we get a season three, and then a season four, if we make it through the books, again, without spoiling you, if we make it through the books to where there's a point where they do come to the New World,
Uh-huh.
And there's still Gaelic involved. If production were moved partially to the States, to the East Coast, for certain things, would you consider relocating for a period of time, even if it's just yourself?
Oh, I mean, we just have to cross that bridge when we come to it. I can't think of any reason why I wouldn't be involved to some extent. But, you know, that just depends on the practicalities and, you know, decision-making of the producers at the time. That'll be up to them to take a view on it, you know, to look at the situation and work out what's best and most practical for the production. And, you know, I'll certainly be available. So we'll see what happens. We'll cross that bridge when we come there, yeah.
So we talked about this a little earlier, going back to the Gaelic language. I know that you do a weekly evening at a local pub in Glasgow called Ungalvin. I have noticed that you have streamed since the crowdfunding or crowdsourcing went live and you guys met all of your goals. I've noticed you've streamed at least two of them. I think there may have been a third. Is that something you're going to be doing consistently?
We're going to have Elias Alexander with us in January, so we're massively looking forward to that. He's an absolutely precocious talent.
He's the piper, right?
But piper, fiddler, singer, guitarist, what the heck does that guy not do, you know?
He's real pretty, too. He's real pretty.
He's a fine fella, isn't he? He's a fine-looking fella.
You should definitely put him all over a live stream.
Camera on him. And then you just talk when you need to talk.
No, I'm not going to lie. My favorite part of the first streaming on Galvan that I watched from the States was when they put the camera down and everyone just kind of walked around. It was like in a break. So it was like everyone just kept walking in front of the camera. There was no sound, but I was just watching it. And it was just like you and Lisa walked in one side. And then I saw a bunch of other people and everyone was drinking and hanging out. No one noticed the camera. That was best part for me.
I know. It's kind of cool though, you know. It's ultimate people watching for folk who are pining to be back in Scotland, you know, just like the coolest, cutest, coziest Scottish pub in the world, you know. And there we all are, just floating about unawares, you know. So we've got Elias in January. That'll be terrific. Then we've got a good friend of mine, James McDonald Reed, who's a terrific storyteller and piper. In February, March, well, we haven't filled that in. We've got a couple of ideas. And a few other bods throughout the year. And we will be live streaming every single one of them if we can manage it. So it's quite a cool thing, you know, the live streaming thing, because it allows people to directly connect with what we genuinely do. So, you know, it's not a stereotype. It's not anything that's sort of put on for an audience. It's literally what we do to pass our time. It's how we work Gaelic language and culture and music into our lives. You know what I mean? So it's a totally natural atmosphere. You know, it's completely uncontrived. Did you happen to catch any of the Halloween storytelling?
I think so. There was, either I did, or I'm confusing it with some of the stories that you told when we were there. Because it was like a spooky stories, right? The one that you were
No, but what's awesome about what they do at Ungalvin is that for the non-Gaelic speakers, which are, you know, most of us, they have the one person who is telling a story in Gaelic, and then you have the other person who is basically on the fly translating it. So you kind of get that great experience of you get to watch the storytelling, and you actually get so much of the story, even if you don't know what's happening, you can't understand it. You get a lot of the feel for it. So you kind of already know what's happening, even though you may not understand the language. So when they actually do the translation, you're like, oh, I actually got that. It's really fascinating, and I love that whole element.
That's you know, it's like the sort of you know, and now translating for the heart of Gaelic. You know, I think a lot of people would you know, I think in the sort of final Gaelic scene in episode 16 is season one, you'd be quite like a little tiny me in the corner of the screen. Yeah, just like translating everything.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure.
Various hand gestures and, you know. But I'm glad that remained untranslated. You know, I still stick to my guns on that. You know, it's massive, massive moment for the language, that, you know.
Do you foresee any other moments like that in season two?
Hmm.
Oh, like, oh, massive language moments.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
That's, oh, well, I mean, I'm not at liberty to talk about that kind of thing.
I don't want specifics.
Detail, but no, there's some good language moments.
Good. Definitely. That's all I wanted.
Oh, yeah. No, there'll be something for everyone.
As there should be.
Of course.
So yeah. You mentioned May, perhaps coming to the U.S. Are you able to talk about what you would be doing here? Or is it just a personal event?
I have a very good friend in Valerie Orsoni. She runs a kind of it's a diet regime, but it's the most genuinely enjoyable, healthy regime I've ever come across in my life. You basically don't have to cut out anything, really. But you just have to be really, really sensible and aware of what you eat. And it just sounds like common sense, but so many of us don't do it. So, you know, I've been sticking to a lot of Valerie's principles on food, and it's powerful stuff. She's got like a 92% success rate with her regime. It's worth checking out. Lebootcamp.com.
Hey, I'm always looking for stuff that works, so I will check that out. I followed her on Twitter at one point, but then it was all French, and I was like, I don't know what she's saying.
Aye, that's it. Aye. Oh, I mean, goodness, Valerie's like, she speaks French, Spanish, English, Dutch, German, Italian, Corsican, a good bit of Gaelic, Lakota Sioux, Swahili, I don't know, a whole bunch of other stuff as well. It's like ridiculous, you know.
That's a lot. That's impressive.
Running your own business and learning like 50 languages at once, you know. She's a bit like myself. She's never happier than when she's literally run off her feet, you know. But yeah, so we're going to go and hang out. It's her birthday, and we're going to go hang out. And it's going to be good. And when I'm over there, I'm really hoping to get an opportunity, perhaps to visit some Native American people and get a blather about language stuff. You know, that'd be really quite something to try and hook up with some of the California tribes and get their thoughts on how it's been for them. You know, get the solidarity going.
Well, we have totally passed the time that we said we would keep you, so we don't want to keep you much longer because I know you are very, very busy.
It's Sunday night. I'm not doing anything in particular. So, whether about just hit me up.
So we would love to hit you up again. So we've read the book, and you've read at least kind of know what happens in the season because you've been working with it, that they start out in France, and that's not a spoiler because they were going to France at the end of season one. And then, of course, they end up back in Scotland, which is where the Gaelic comes in, which is obviously your part of that. So would we be able to hit you up again once some of the Gaelic is aired?
Once it's aired?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, next year.
See when stuff is aired, we can just talk the crap out of it.
Totally.
Yes.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I don't know. Probably we'll not get there because when we'll be in Scotland some point in April. We don't have an exact date yet, but the show will probably start. It'll be spring, probably March or April. But even if it starts like early April, we will have not gotten to Scotland. The show will still be in France. So we will not have had a chance to probably, even if we're there and chatting with you at Angelvan or, you know, having a whiskey tasting, what have you, there won't be an opportunity to actually, you know, chat about stuff because it won't have aired yet. So that's unfortunate. But we would definitely love to hit you up once it has.
we'll do that. You can just hit me up once I'm 37.
That's, when is that again? Like June?
That's, about 16 years from now.
Stop it. Stop it.
Aye, June.
Aye. I'm like, that's June.
It is indeed.
It's been a joy to have you. We can't wait to have you back. And
it's been a joy to be had.
Thank you so much for joining us and chatting about Gaelic and the movement and how things are progressing. And of course, the little wee show we all love.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Lovely to be back. Enjoyed myself. All the best then, eh?
Absolutely. All the best, and we will see you in a few short months.
Indeed. Take it easy.
Oh, thank you so much. You too.
Thank you, Valley.
So that was such a treat. It's always a treat to have him here, and can't wait to do it again.
It's nice that we have people that we can literally call friends of the show, who are not just friends of the show, but they're
friends of the show.
Of the show and of its hosts. I mean, I would consider him an actual friend, not just
he's
not just a guy who's really nice enough to talk to us on our show.
Not just a guy who says, as at our last Ungalvan appearance, we didn't appear, our tending on Ungalvan the second and final time in 2015. And I was like off my head
crying,
right?
Or as they would say, greeting.
Oh my gosh, I was greeting like up a storm. And he, poor dude, was like, what's wrong?
You went to the bathroom crying. They sent me in after you.
I know, because I was, I mean, I had drunk I had drunk a little bit.
A little more than normal.
Because
normal is none.
I just gave her a high five. Or she just gave, that was pretty good. I admit. Because normal is pretty much zippity-doo-dah. Yeah, so I was a little bit, had a few things. And then sad.
She runs to melancholy when she drinks.
Oh, I run to melancholy when I don't drink.
I know, I'm just saying. Everything gets a little bigger when you drink.
I got to keep that in mind. So I was already sad because it was our next to last night. But it was our last night there with seeing Agav, seeing Ailee. Of course, with Mandy, because Mandy left, and oh my goodness, it was such an amazing week. So there was such an emotional time because we were saying goodbye to people we had known for almost a year and a half or so. So we were already saying goodbye to friends. And of course, I was having a few drinks. So I was already, it was a very fun, festive mood because Ungalvan is wonderful, but seeing our friends and being with them and then drinking a little bit,
so take already from that, being sad. Fun and festive. Everyone else was fun and festive.
Oh, they were.
You were not.
Oh my gosh. I was just weepy.
That was bad.
I didn't bawl. I was weepy.
No.
Did I bawl in the bathroom?
Oh, you were like.
I was a monster in the bathroom. Not a monster.
No, I wouldn't say monster.
I was like sobbing. Wasn't I?
You were crying pretty hardcore.
Like the whole, like the racking sobs at that point.
All I know is the few times I've seen you that drunk. This was the only time. The only of those two times. That you were not on the ground. So you were on your feet, so you clearly, this was not the drunkest I've ever seen you, but okay. You were definitely, like, in that mindset.
But it's so funny, I definitely go to melancholy, but wow, it was an amazing night. It was, Summer's like, it's fun and festive, and I'm like, yeah, it was, but I guess that's how I get festive, I don't know. But anyway, I think it was harder for me, because I have a little bit more of a history with Scotland, or at least in Scotland, and that is that I lived there and studied there for a year, so made friends, just love the country already, like anybody else that we know who appreciates the country, but so has spent so much time there and travel that I just felt I hadn't been back in a number of years. So being back and making new friends, meeting new friends, having such amazing experiences, and with Mandy, I mean, it was incomparable, that trip. Incomparable. So it was very emotional for me to have to say goodbye so quickly. That's what it was. So you add a little bit of whiskey, and I'm weeping up a storm. So let us know. This is a very interesting way to close the show, Ginger. Let us know how you get when you drink.
No. You can. Tell us. What's your drunk tell?
Do we? Ginger's a weepy mess. Summer, what do you do?
Summer's
gets along with everybody.
I get loud and a little flirty.
I was about to say flirty. Yeah, she does get flirty.
With everyone.
Even girls?
Sure.
Not me.
Not
you still know the difference?
I'm drunk, not blind.
Okay, on that note, I think it's time to wrap. Thank you, as always. Was Summer, do you have anything final to say? I think you said it. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. As always, we look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/Outlander Pod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at Outlander Pod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Outlander Pod, or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com.